Well, hello everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi everyone, Dr. Tim Clinton. Welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. Today we have a very important interview for you to hear as we begin 2022 together. We present to you an interview from late last year I had with Jeannie Mancini. She's head of the powerful pro-life organization, March for Life. Let's jump right in here on Family Talk. And remember, this month is Sanctity of Human Life Month. We hope you'll stand strong for life. Call us at 877-732-6825. To find out how you can help us do that. Hello and welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, and your co-host here on Family Talk. There's one issue that has made its way into the news cycle over and over during the last 12 months or so, and that issue is abortion. From President Biden rescinding the Mexico City policy during his first month in office to mail order abortion pills being widely distributed during the height of the COVID pandemic, now the Texas heartbeat law and the Mississippi abortion case, which some believe could overturn the Roe versus Wade decision, set to be heard by the Supreme Court in December. In all, over 60 million babies have been senselessly murdered in the womb since that Roe versus Wade case was passed in 1973. If you consider the 4 million babies that are born every year in the United States, that number of 60 million has a lot of gravity to it. Can't even begin to imagine the impact that those little lives would have had in our world today if they had been allowed to live. Dr. Dobson has been on the front lines of the fight for life since the Roe versus Wade passage in 73, alongside many passionate Christian and conservative leaders. Our guest today has made it her life mission to fight against abortion and to fight for the lives of the preborn. Her name, Jeannie Mancini. She is the president of the March for Life Education and Defense Fund. With her team, Jeannie is committed to restoring a culture of life here in the United States. And one of the ways they do that is by hosting the annual March for Life event in Washington, D.C. Before taking her role as president of March for Life, Jeannie worked for the Family Research Council. And before that, she worked for the United States Department of Health and Human Services in the Office of the Secretary. She holds an undergraduate degree in psychology from James Madison University, a master's degree in theology, a master's degree in the theology of marriage and family from Pope John Paul II Institute for Studies on Marriage and Family. Jeannie, thank you so much for joining us today. Dr. Dobson, his wife Shirley, they love you. They send their regards.
Oh gosh, I'm such fans of Dr. Dobson and Mrs. Dobson. I mean, they've just been at the forefront of, you know, this issue and so many critical social issues in our culture, just filled with gratitude for their leadership.
Hey, as we get started, everyone's heard of the March for Life. The annual March for Life event held in Washington, D.C. It's quite amazing. I was there 2 years ago. Last year, of course, it was virtual. But the event, a tip of the hat to you and the amazing work of your team. Jeannie, tell us a little bit about what it is, how it got started.
So what is it? It is literally the largest annual human rights demonstration worldwide, with hundreds of thousands of people participating every single year. And how it got started, I mean, it's really quite providential in one of these moments of good things coming from a really sad moment in the culture. So, of course, Roe v. Wade and its partner Supreme Court case, Doe v. Bolton, were passed way back in 1973, January 22nd, to be exact. And so those decisions legalized abortion in all of the states around the United States, really in all trimesters throughout the states. And so the March for Life began a year after that. So, you know, fast forward about 7-8 months after Roe v. Wade, Doe v. Bolton were decided, and there were some, you know, just ardent pro-lifers, Nellie Gray, our founder, being one of them. They gathered together at a meeting in Capitol Hill, in fact, just in her townhouse, you know, around her kitchen table, and said, what are we going to do about this? We need to draw a line in the sand. And thus, you know, the first March for Life was born. And so the very first one was, you know, on a bright, sunny day in Washington, D.C. in January, which I think that God was sort of having a good sense of humor because it's never since that time been a bright, you know, warm, sunny day in Washington, D.C. in the middle of January. But anyway, so the very first March for Life then, January 22nd, 1974. And we've marched every single year since then. And the march has grown every year, and its demographics have gotten younger over the years. So anybody who comes to the March for Life will see that it is, while we're, you know, commemorating the loss of life in America, and the fact that, as you mentioned, we've lost over 62 million Americans to abortion. But the march is still a joyful event because we know that we're there standing up for the single most significant human rights issue of our time. And these young people that attend are just the best ambassadors for life. Their enthusiasm, their creativity with the signs that they bring and they hold up is just incredible. So really, really want to encourage your listeners to come in person to the March for Life, because I've heard from so many people that it's a life-changing event. It's very hard to put into words. It's like, you know, you study about God, you read about God, all this, but unless you know God and experience God, you don't really know what that means. And it's, you know, not to equate the March for Life to God, but reading about it, seeing pictures, hearing about it is very different than actually attending. It's really kind of a life-changing experience, and everybody should do it at least once in their life.
Jeannie, my wife, Julie, used to lead the Liberty Godparent Home in Lynchburg, Virginia, and she would take a team up to Washington every year, and she would say, Tim, you have got to go. You've got to go. A couple of years ago, I got baptized in my first experience up there, and Jeannie, it was amazing. You said hundreds of thousands of people. It's true. It was, the mall was packed, but I was sobered by and excited about the young faces I saw. They were everywhere. Jeannie, that millennial, that Gen X group, they were in mass. And I'll tell you what, they had a lot of energy. What is it that you think is pulling that generation?
Young people have this desire to do the good, right? So like, so they're social justice warriors, and, you know, they're human rights warriors and what have you. And they haven't had the experiences maybe that some of us who are a little bit older can be a little bit cynical, you know, towards change and culture and what have you. They've also grown up seeing the sonograms and the ultrasonography, you know, pictures of their little brothers, their little sisters, their friends. And so they see that, you know, a developing child is not a lifeless blob of tissue, but it's actually a developing child from in its earliest stages. And I think that they're just drawn to the good. Social justice begins in the womb, and they seem to get that and to know it and to want to put all of their eggs in that basket. Like, they want to do everything possible to abolish abortion. They are the generation that's going to abolish abortion, as they say, and it's so attractive.
Jeannie, since that infamous decision, Roe versus Wade, some 62 million babies, we've talked about that already, have been lost to abortion. You call abortion the single greatest human rights abuse of our day. Explain that a little bit more to us.
So listen, there are a fair number of human rights abuses going on out there. I mean, and we could delve into that. You know, you've got trafficking issues, you've got all sorts of poverty issues, some true racial issues, and what have you. I mean, we could really go on to that. But it's impossible for the human person to fully flourish in any of those other sort of what I'd call periphery issues, as important as they are, if they're not given the most basic human right, which is just the right to come to term, to be born. So it's like sort of the preeminent human rights issue. If someone is not able to be born, it's just impossible for them to experience anything else and to fully flourish as a human being. So if we focus so much on those other issues, which they're very important, and people are called to focus on those other issues, and thanks be to God for that. But we can sometimes, I think, lose sight of the fact that the single most important issue needs to be taken care of. And our country gets comfortable with legalized abortion. It's like we almost forget or think that lives are erased, but no, like every single day we are losing human lives to this scourge. And we have to kind of remind ourselves of that significant human rights abuse.
Jeannie, I wonder what goes on in your heart and in your mind as you see all this stuff happening and all those issues you've been battling cycle right back around again and hit the forefront of a lot of what everybody's talking about and battling over.
Okay, so the bigger challenge, and the laws are so important, and that's why we were founded at the March for Life, but the bigger challenge is changing hearts and minds in this issue, you know, creating a culture where abortion is unthinkable. And so I just want to focus on that for 1 minute. The abortion rate, believe it or not, is at its lowest ever since Roe v. Wade. So we are going in the right direction. And I say that with some fear and trepidation, just in the sense of while we are going in the right direction, there's still over 800,000 abortions every single year in our country. So there's very many. But the abortion rate has decreased, and then the abortion incidence has decreased. So it's like the rate itself has decreased, but the actual number of abortions has also decreased. So those things are good. More people self-identify as being pro-life than ever before. And most Americans would limit abortion much more than it's limited in our country. They would limit abortion at most to the first 3 months of pregnancy. And that's like 8 out of 10 Americans for well over a decade. The polling information has shown that. So that's very different than, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
Another massive victory in changing hearts and minds is that we mentioned young people. When you look at like the general social survey data, for example, young people, that demographic is the single cohort that shifted most in the direction of life. So we've got young people again on the side of life, and we were talking about this. Pregnancy care centers are flourishing. So there are well over 2,000 pregnancy care centers around the country, and they collectively give over $100 million in free resources to women and men facing unexpected pregnancies every year. And that's up. There were only about 500 in the early 80s. So we're well over 2,000. And the opposite has happened with abortion clinics.
They're closing.
In the 80s, there were well over 2,000 abortion clinics. Now there's less than 700. So we're seeing all of these shifts, these massive cultural shifts in the direction of life. But oh, by the way, we do have this thing called the Supreme Court, and they're seeing some pretty exciting cases this year. And so there's a lot of hope and excitement around that too. So that's my very long answer to your question.
That's Jeannie, at the end of the day, you would say, hey, we're winning. This is, life is winning. And while we've got a few hurdles here in front of us, there's a lot of energy and a lot of movement going in the right direction. Jeannie, I wanted to say with that, you quoted some statistics. 77% of Americans say that they're against taxpayer funding of abortion overseas. 7 in 10 Americans want limits on abortion. That's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Most of them, you said, within the first, they want it limited to the first 3 months of pregnancy. Let me go a step further. 6 in 10 are against domestic taxpayer funding on abortion. Here's my question. How in the world then are we drifting into this extremism that we're seeing? Abortion on demand up until the birth of a child, basically infanticide. How do we go from where the public is at to these kind of battles in our government?
So what we're seeing on the left with pro-abortion members of Congress and elected officials is this very extreme view that you just described. And it's horrifying, really. I mean, you know, in my own state, Virginia, our governor, who's currently, you know, our governor, actually said on a radio interview that he thinks that babies, and he's a pediatrician, by the way, that babies should still be allowed to be aborted after they've been born. I mean, this is crazy. Any abortion is crazy, but even most pro-choicers don't agree with this. So how do we fix that? I think one of the most important things is to keep talking about this, because a lot of people, even though maybe you and I are steeped in the issue, a lot of people don't really know where politicians stand on this. And then let your member of Congress and your elected officials know where you stand on that. I mean, the value of a call, a letter, an email to your elected official is so important. And I think sometimes people think they get lost, they don't listen to it, et cetera. But no, working closely on the Hill, I can tell you that those things really do matter. And that's something that we emphasize at the March for Life. We have, you know, our 501c3 March for Life Education and Defense Fund, and then we have March for Life Action, so that we can do the lobbying on the Hill and that we can take the collective voice of the marchers every single day. And when there is, you know, a good bill or a bad bill, we can take those hundreds of thousands of voices and push the elected officials to make the right decision. And these things do really matter. And then always, I would just say prayer and fasting. I mean, this is a spiritual battle.
It is. Jeannie, what do you think it is that makes abortion such a polarizing issue? What's the motivation, I guess, maybe behind politicians to push for funding support for abortion versus, say, supporting moms, doing pregnancy clinics and things like that? I mean, it just doesn't even seem logical to me.
Well, I certainly agree. Let me first just underscore the significance of what you just asked and say how much I agree with you, that it is polarizing. And I've been very blessed to be able to meet a lot of people who are steeped in the media. So we'll meet, you know, not in terms of an interview, but we'll get coffee and get to know each other in advance of some big thing happening and then we're interviewing. And I've been blown away by the secret pro-lifers in the media and the stories that they've shared with me about how this is the single most divisive issue. And they're just not allowed to use certain language. They absolutely can't report things a certain way. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I mostly want to underscore, oh yeah, this is about as divisive as it gets. Why? Probably because we live in a culture of walking wounded, and many women and men have been engaged and involved in an abortion. And we know that, you know, reality is not arbitrary. When you take the life of a baby, that you can say, you know, I'm pro-abortion and that's fine and that's a woman's right, but it doesn't change like reality. And the truth is that the woman and the man still has the sad consequences. Not that they can't be healed. There's always hope and healing in God, but it doesn't change the reality that a life was taken and that they still live with that tremendous, you know, burden on their heart. And I think, you know, even I could see in marriage, like when we, when something is very emotional, it's because there's a wound underneath it and we have to get at it and talk about it and communicate when we're talking. So I say that because I think that we live in the culture of the walking wounded right now, and that lots of people are responding and carrying some of that sad baggage that, again, can always be healed by God's grace. But the truth of taking a life of a child is significant, and that you carry some sad consequences with you on that.
Jeannie, I think most of the people I talk to are with you. They agree. You know, according to the Guttmacher Institute, they say somewhat, maybe 40%, some suggest maybe 1 in 4 of American women have had an abortion. Jeannie, what's your thought on that?
Okay, so the Guttmacher data, I'd have to see the specific study, but I think that's about right. 1 in 4 women in our country, which is just heartbreaking. And yes, I think every time we talk about this, we absolutely have to approach it from the perspective of, we know that there are people around us right now, people in our families that have been through this. And we just want to remind you that there's hope and healing, and always approach it along those lines. And what can we do to accompany women along the way? And, you know, when they're facing an unexpected pregnancy, what a woman most needs is to be told, you got this, you can do it. And she needs the emotional support, the financial support, the other kinds of support. But what she most wants to hear in that moment is, yeah, you got this, you can do this, you have this within you. And that's really, she needs someone to accompany her through that. So basically, I couldn't agree more.
You're listening to Family Talk, a division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, co-host. Our special guest today is Jeannie Mancini. She's the president of the March for Life Education Defense Fund. She leads that amazing event every year up in Washington, D.C., a strong voice for life. Delightful conversation today. Jeannie, as a part of this, it all boils down to, in the debate, if you will, the personhood issue. When is a child declared a human, a person? Can you help us understand that? Because I think people sometimes get lost in all the debate and the ruckus going on around this issue that they don't even really understand what the core issue is that we have to understand.
Yeah, a lot of people have different ideas about the best strategy to legally end abortion. And many people think that having personhood amendments is the best approach. So you've got sort of school of thought. I have a different school of thought, but I don't disagree per se with that. I just think I'm not sure what's legally going to end it. But as for the deeper philosophical question about when does a human life begin, listen, we know that God is most powerful. He's our creator. All the theological reasons that life begins right at the moment of conception. But guess what? We can just look at science. A human being's DNA is there, you know, at the moment of conception. They've got everything in that moment that they need to be a full human person. And essentially, science, more than anything else, proves that a person is a person from the moment of conception. And so when I was working in the office of the secretary at HHS, I was not among a lot of friendly people on this issue. In other words, many people were pro-choice. And I did have a scientist from NIH one day quietly pull me aside, whisper to me, I know you're pro-life. I just was wondering, you know, are you pro-life because of your religious beliefs? And I said, well, my religious beliefs support me and give me strength because of this, but you know, I think science is on the side of life. And he said, I'm not a religious person. I'm an atheist, but I don't see how any scientist in good standing could say otherwise. It's so clear that life begins at conception from a scientific perspective. It just is.
Because the debate pushback is, no, this is my body, my choice. No, no, no. You're talking about something that is not your body. This right. is a child. And that's really the heart of the issue. Jeannie, let's end. We're fighting time here where we started. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of excitement. I've been there. I've seen it. And it's amazing what God's doing. If someone's listening right now and they say, boy, I'd like to learn a lot more about March for Life and I want to get involved in the movement, what can they do? How can they find out more and how can they learn more about you?
First of all, mark their calendar January 21st, 2022, and plan to come to Washington, D.C. that day for a life-changing experience. But check us out. We've got so much information on our website, marchforlife.org. And you can also check out our State March initiative there as well, where there's lots of exciting things happening around the country.
Jeannie, one last thing before you go, too. And if someone's listening and their heart's broken because as they listen to this, they reflect back to their past and it brings tears to their eyes. And they've prayed many times to God asking for forgiveness and grace. And they want to stand with you strong on this issue. Can you give us a closing word to each and every one of them?
Please come. We always have a very special testimony of a woman who, you know, will share her story, and we will have that again this year. We haven't announced who that person is. And at the end of the March for Life, we have women stand in front of the Supreme Court and men sharing their testimonies, and they are silent no more about their testimonies. But absolutely, if you have even the slightest doubt that there's hope or healing or a future for you, that is not from God. Shame is not from God. I mean, really, God wants you to live the fullness of who you are and to be able to be released of any, you know, darkness, and just know that there is hope and healing. And Jeremiah 29:11, for I know well the plans I have in mind for you, says the Lord, plans for good and not for evil, plans for a future full of hope.
Yeah, he forgives you. Great words. I'm reminded of Edmund Burke, all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good men, and I'll say, and women, to do nothing. Jeannie, it's been a delight. On behalf of Dr. Dobson, his wife Shirley, the team here at Family Talk, we again tip the hat to you and salute the amazing work that God's doing in and through you and the great March for Life. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was a joy.
Well, this concludes our insightful interview for today. You've been listening to our own Dr. Tim Clinton with his special guest, national anti-abortion defender Jeannie Mancini, president of the March for Life Education and Defense Fund. A reminder, the National March for Life Day is coming up on Friday, January 21st. Make plans to get out and let your voices be heard. And this is Sanctity of Human Life Month here at Family Talk. Your gift to us can go a long way towards saving the lives of the preborn in the womb. Your gift of any amount in support of our ministry goes a long way towards saving the lives of the preborn. Find out how to support the cause at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. And here's a suggestion. How about a resource for you and your family or to pass along to a friend? That's right, this month only, we offer the Standing Strong for Life 3-track CD, yours for a donation of any amount. Go to drjamesdobson.org/standforlife. I'll repeat that. It's very important. drjamesdobson.org/standforlife. Or call us at 877-732-6825. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Keep standing up for the sanctity of all precious human life. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.